Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off season tour. And since this is the week Christopher Robin comes out, I want to tell you that my name's Dave Gonzalez, and I had a toy T-Rex from Jurassic Park growing up, and I would love if that toy from my childhood came alive. I'd have a little tiny plastic T-Rex running around, eating bugs and stuff.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I had a toy, a childhood toy that came to life, it would definitely be, I had an original E.T. from when the movie came out, and I'd want it to come to life for two reasons. One, because it's super valuable and I would want it to come find me. And two, because he was like my best friend when I was little. And this week, no Joanna, as you can, you missed her in between Dave and I. She was there, but like Ant-Man, she just goes right by. We got Theo here this week.
Hello.
Theo, what of your childhood toys would you want your to come alive for you?
Let's also do the whole bit. So my name is Theo Broxson. And if I could have one of my childhood toys come alive, it would probably be my little toy Ewok that I got from Disney World when I was a little kid.
Is that the one that you have still on in the living room?
Yep, still on the shelf.
Man, that's probably worth some money.
Probably not. But
there's probably a Star Wars fan out there who would buy it for a lot of money.
I'd love to see the little like miniature Ewok come alive and interact with my dog.
That would be fun.
That would be entertaining.
Yeah, be some good stuff in my mind.
As long as it wasn't in a hunting position.
The Ewok.
Imagine that would be. Right? You want them to be fast friends.
I still think that she would try to rip its stuffing out. Because she rips the stuffing out of everything. And that...
It gets pretty dark.
That would be very harrowing.
Yeah.
Ugh. So, this week, we're doing a mystery grab bag, a Maester's mystery grab bag, where Neil, Theo, and I will be discussing some topics that we've sort of missed in this full month of Storm of Spoilering, or last full month of Storm of Spoilering. There was, like, some Comic-Con, and there was some other stuff happening. We were watching, like, multiple Mission Impossible movies.
Mission Impossible movies.
It's been a busy month. There's some stuff to catch up on. If you are a Maester or above subscriber on our Patreon, patreon.com/Storm of Spoilers, there'll be a bonus week segment this week where Neil and Theo are going to try to convince me to watch the Canadian comedy Letterkenny, and I'm going to try to convince them to watch the TBS comedy Wrecked. You're going to learn a little bit about both in case you don't know anything. But first, speaking of our Patreons, we have to do our monthly shout out of some of our Patreons right now. This month we're going to be doing first names and last initials for this inaugural month. It does reoccur though, so if we decide in our Patreon only subscriber Slack there's a better way to do it, we'll do it better that much. Neil, hit me with some names of fantastic patrons that subscribe through Patreon to Star Wars Spoilers.
Yeah, it's just a lot going on there.
It's a lot of words.
Anyway,
and like we're just more words here.
I like to think of this as a list of all my friends. And, I'll give you the first 10. We got Abby G, Adam W, Adrian M, Ajax, very mysterious, no last initial, Alejandro V, Alexander W, Alyssa S, Amber V, Amy R, and Amy G. There's a lot of Amy's.
There is. I've got one more. Amy C, Andrea K, Annie AK, Aubrey E, Ben O, Betsy, Bettany, I am so sorry, Bettany T, Billy B, Brandy M, Bria, Brian M, Brianne P.
And we have others. Bronwyn B, awesome. Brian R, Bryce Q, Cameron F, Chris S, Chris M, Christina K, Christina S, Christopher M, and Chuck P.
Then there's also Cody D, Corey H, Crystal K, Damon V, Dan C, Daniel B, Danielle P, David C, David A, and David K. Some good Davids there. I like that name.
Lots of Davids. Still in the D's. We got Debbie D, Del N, Dennis R, Derek D, Derek B, Delane M. We got Dre, just Dre. We got Dumb Pockets, which I don't think is a name. But if it is, awesome. We got Dylan W, Eleanor C.
We got Ellen R. We got Ellen C. We got another Ellen. No, Emily R. Good. I was going to say two Ellen R's not in order. That would have been weird. Emily R, Aaron G, Aaron with a mystery last name, F M, Fanny M, Phoebo T, Felix J, Fiona G, another person whose entry is just G, but is getting their money's worth of the shout out, and Gate Crew Girl.
I like the ones that are just usernames, because I've got one too. It's Great on Toast. Awesome.
That's a great username.
We've also got a Greg J, Gretchen L, Gustavo V. It's Gustavo.
Hey.
Hannah W, Heather W, Holly H, Hope S, Huang L, Ira S,
Iski I, Jabberly, which is just one, no last name, James C, James H, Jarrett G, Jen C, Jennifer Q, Jim S, Jocelyn, Joe J, John S, H.
All right, we got one more segment. We'll come back to this list. We got Jonathan B, Jose C, Josh F, Josh D, Joshua L, Judy W, Julie B, Julie S, Justin Y, and see, this one always gets me. Is it Carrie or Kari?
You say Carrie, and then I'll say Kari.
Last initial K. That's what we got for now. We'll come back to our July shout-outs later in the show.
If you also want to be shouted out at least once a month from here on out, not at a huge, gigantic chunk, you could sign up at patreon.com/stormofspoilers at the level for monthly shout-outs, but any level will get you access to the Slack where you could meet some of these fantastic people and realize why you should be there.
Yeah, and we should mention for our regular listeners that normally we won't be reading this many names. It's just that we didn't do any of the July shout-outs, and it's really my fault for not putting it in the show notes at all during July. So we're doing them all this week, but next month we'll be doing them as we go. So
that's right. Yeah. So to stop wanking ourselves off, we're going to forego reviews this week and go straight to Neil for storm chasing.
It's a real Storm Bros transition there, Dave.
Hey, well, you know, it's the least weird all of us wanking each other off is ever going to be, I guess.
Let's speak for yourself.
Sorry, Theo. Anyway, so we're going storm chasing, and we're going to talk about one pop culture storm. This whole week this whole episode is going to be a lot of storm chasing. But if you have to pick one movie, show, book, podcast, lifestyle accessory, in my case this week, what would that be? We're going to start with Theo since you're the honored guest.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. So this week, there's a couple things that have been taking up my time. One is the Culture Novels by a Scottish writer named Ian Banks. I've been reading and listening to them on Audible pretty obsessively. They actually are adapting the first one right now for an Amazon series. Have either of you guys ever read any of the work by Ian Banks?
I have not.
Not that I know of.
Really fantastic science fiction. He's got this one series of 10 books called the Culture Novels, and basically, the culture is supposed to be this kind of galactic group of essentially anarchists who are living in kind of a fully automated luxury communist groups across the galaxy. And kind of once that's been achieved by a certain like degree of humanity, how do they continue to function? And then like how do they interact with other groups in the galaxy? So like there's this whole deal where there's a... there's a group called Contact, and then like kind of a subset of Contact is Special Circumstances, and those are the people that kind of will go and, you know, maybe turn the screws on another society that's like fascist and oppressive and kind of free the people that are being oppressed and kind of, yeah, it's just really interesting. I'm really obsessed with it. I've listened to like, I think I've read two of the books and listened to like five of the books in the last probably month or two.
Yeah.
So that's been a lot of fun. And then I'm also really obsessed with Kitchen Nightmares right now.
Nice.
I don't know exactly what. Well, no, I know exactly what. I listened to the Current Affairs podcast, and they were talking about Kitchen Nightmares. And yeah.
Well, isn't it just like Bar Rescue, another staple of?
It's like Bar Rescue, except they don't try to necessarily like totally remake the place. They let the concept stay. So it's like, you know, if you have an Italian restaurant, it's a bad restaurant. Like at the end of it, it's still going to be a restaurant. Or an Italian restaurant. It's just not necessarily going to have the same menu.
Right. So it's not going to be like a dive bar that they turn into like a sports bar.
Yeah. Like in Bar Rescue, like, and don't get me wrong, I love Bar Rescue. sometimes they'll be like, oh, you know, we're going to rename it and it's going to be a, like I remember one time they did like a bacon bar. And it was just like all bacon themed and like bacon obsessed. It was really dumb.
Hey, we went to a bacon themed restaurant once. That was okay.
We did?
Yeah, we did.
It seems like two very different things, especially when you're talking about bacon.
Yeah. Like all the servers had like bacon t-shirts on and like they'd be like, yeah, bacon. It's like, here's a bacon.
How are you watching?
That sounds pretty great.
How are you watching Kitchen Nightmares?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Nice.
Yeah.
On the Prime.
Have you looked up a show called Hotel Hell?
No, I've seen it. I have not watched it. I think I initially might have been a little stoned when I saw that, and I thought maybe it was just about like
a hotel from in hell.
Yeah, or like, you know, like haunted hotels, and it wasn't that, so I didn't watch it.
Right. It's like Kitchen Nightmares. It has Gordon Ramsay, but he goes and he fixes up hotels. And the only reason I like it as much as I like Kitchen Nightmares is the hotel owners that they had for, I think there's only two seasons, but are like supremely dumb. If you think you have like bar owners and restaurant owners that you've seen that have been dumb, wait till you see like hotel owners who think they know what they're doing. Hilarious.
That feels like the kind of show that like after this whole Trump thing is over and like most of them are like in jail or whatever, that Eric Trump,
hotel owners.
That feels like the show that Eric Trump will be on like in like 10 years.
Like, save my hotel,
save
Gordon
last
Ramsay.
Trump hotel.
Well, that's also a fun thing about like Gordon Ramsay's deal is like, because like Taffer will go after, like on Bar Rescue, John Taffer would go after like the employees. And with Ramsay, and this is something they pointed out on Current Affairs, so I want to act like I came up with this idea, but they pointed out that like he always goes after the boss. And because he's like kind
he's
of
very
has
pro
that,
worker.
Yeah, exactly. He treats the staff with so much respect and these like idiot owners and managers of these restaurants, which like, you know, I've worked service before. I'm pretty sure Neil,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Plenty of retail, food service, and golf course service, which is worse than all of those.
Yeah. Like, and you know, the people that you work for are usually the stupidest fucking people you've ever met in your life. And it's really great to see somebody just like go after those people and just be like, you're an idiot. Like you should be ashamed of yourself. You're ashamed of your family. You're ashamed of everything. Like this is a nightmare and I hate you. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's just my two cents.
Nice. Neil, what storm are you chasing?
So I have three, just multiple big projects. I know, but no, I really am not chasing any particular pop culture storm this week. And I'll tell you why, because I've had three sort of major life projects going on. One is we relaunched nonfix.com, which is a website about documentaries, which I had to totally design. So if you're a design nerd, you can go and then you can pay for our Patreon and jump into the Slack and tell me how I suck at design. Anyway, so relaunched that. It's about documentaries. It's great. Also, Cape related things. this week on Film School Rejects, we're doing a thing called Update the Lists. So I'm working on updating all of our, like, my Game of Thrones episode rankings list and my Perfect Shots of Star Wars list is getting updated. But we had a bunch of writers also submit new lists, including one of the most fun things and one of the most fun and also challenging things I've ever edited. Rebecca Pale, who a lot of Pajiban people will know, she writes for Pajiba, wrote her first article for Film School Rejects, which is the 60 best capes in the history of film. And it's one of
60 best capes.
Yeah. And it's really impressive. For several reasons. One is this is not like some surface level list of cinematic capes. Like this spans like from the 1920s all the way to, you know, movies that came out this year. It's extremely thorough and well thought out. So I spent pretty much the entire day editing and then reading and consuming this list. It was great. So that's part two. Part three is I think I've become a headband person. Which I don't know what that means.
But it's definitely true, though.
It's definitely true. I think
sleeping with that thing.
What?
You sleeping with that thing?
No, I don't, you don't need to sleep in a headband.
You sure?
Well, I mean, you can try it.
I mean, I think you do.
Maybe.
Oh, I don't know.
So I don't know what that means. I think I have. Speaking of our Slack, I think I have the permission of our Slack to continue wearing a headband. I pulled it off in public the other day. Felt pretty good just rocking a headband.
Thanks for not being with me when you did that.
Yeah. Well, you know,
appreciate that.
Yeah. I can't see it, so I'm going to reserve judgment, but I don't feel good about it. But if it makes you feel good, that's the important thing. Like, who am I to say? Like, I went to a Renaissance fair two weekends ago, last weekend, who knows anymore. And I got like a peasant's shirt. It's like made out of linen. And it's really baggy. Java hates nice. It. So I just wear it around the house.
So it's like a puffy shirt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll send you guys a picture of it at some point, but not in public. Never in public.
It'd be funny if you could only wear it in public because Java was too mad about it when you wore it at the house.
that would be interesting. Just like walk outside with a backpack and a t-shirt, and then out of the backpack comes the peasant shirt. All ready to go.
Or even weirder, you keep walking out of the house with no shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
But a bag.
But a bag. And,
yeah.
And Java's like, just like, what the
see
hell?
You later.
But, yeah, it was like those kids in like middle school and high school who had like super conservative parents who wouldn't let them like wear makeup or anything, and they would like
leave the house,
get the house in like baggy shirts and pants, and by the time they got to school, they're wearing like stylish clothes and like full makeup, and then having to take it all off before they got home again.
Right. Man. That would just be this. Is, so what you're saying is I should be thankful it's just a peasant shirt, and I could, you know, make it work.
Right.
Well, I'm assuming you're doing some like Captain Jack Sparrow eye makeup with it too.
No, I mean, I guess, yeah, if I'm going out in the peasant shirt, I might as well commit to it at this point. This week, my storm is a Nintendo Switch game, Mario Tennis Aces. Have either of you guys played a Nintendo Switch?
I've seen a Nintendo Switch.
Okay, good. That's like playing one for the most part. It's like a video game system that Nintendo has made.
It's got the little handles.
It's got little handles you could slide in and out. Various types of things. Mario Tennis, of course, was a franchise that started on the Virtual Boy way back when, and now has become a new iteration for the Switch. The interesting thing about this one is I was playing with Matt Patches, who I do another podcast with, Fighting in the War Room. He works at Polygon as their entertainment editor now. Which means he's not responsible for video game news, but he's immersed in it, having been working at Polygon, and managed to get him into Mario Tennis, his job did, through like some sort of inter-office tournament. I don't know exactly. So I decided to check it out so I could maybe play with Patches online, and it is so much like a fighting game, despite the fact that it is about Mario Tennis. There's like power-ups, and there are counters for each type of way you could hit the ball, and it all depends on sort of reaction time and moving your character and pressing the right button at the right time. And for me, that really sort of codes it more as fighting game than as a sporting game. So I've been spending some time getting my ass kicked on the internet by faceless people who have enough time to get really good at this hand-eye coordination and sort of playing against my natural inclination to not play fighting games to, you know, hack away at some Mario Tennis Aces. as I'm talking about it, I'm realizing it doesn't sound like I'm having fun, but I am most of the time.
Sounds really hard.
It's like the way my mind fits around game is like with spotlight mechanic and then train myself to be good at that mechanic until game either its plot ends or I lose interest in it. So I understand how Mario Tennis is working. I'm just taking a while to get my hands and brain to work that way.
Now I'm thinking about how you could potentially like rebrand tennis for a different crowd and make it into more of like a fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
put a bear out there with them.
Well, just kind of like change mm-hmm. the atmosphere of the stadiums. It's more raucous and like there's somebody in between, like round one, you know. And like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of liking this idea actually.
Because I make tennis not suck.
Well, I mean, I guess tennis is still very popular. I'm assuming it's very popular, but I don't give a shit about it. But I do like, you know, like wrestling, and I think you can make tennis into more of like a wrestling style. Like a wrestling style situation, you know. I think that'd be
sure.
It's a thought.
This actually.
You could take the rules of the game and graft it onto something interesting. I think that's what Mario Tennis definitely shows.
Yeah, this might be something. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, if you're gonna lose athleticism, you got to put like a gimmick in. That's why Rocket League is so interesting, because it's like obviously it doesn't take great athleticism for a CG soccer player to keep up stamina or anything like that. So what if it were cars?
Yeah. This makes me think, because it's possible that my Xbox has died and gone to Xbox hell.
Get a Switch.
Well, and I've been polling people online and talking about it in the Slack about what I should do. Should I buy, as I was telling Theo the other day, the Spider-Man edition PlayStation 4 that looks awesome?
It does look awesome.
Because really all I need it for is a Blu-ray player, because we can't currently play Blu-rays in the living room.
So that's a different need set than me and my Switch.
For the same amount of money, I could probably buy a Switch and just a normal Blu-ray player.
Yeah, I was about to say, you can also buy a Blu-ray player for like $50.
Yeah, but I don't want to. Since when do I do that? If I'm going to buy a Blu-ray player, I might as well buy one that allows me to play FIFA.
For that once a year you feel like playing FIFA?
Yeah. Well, and I want to buy NBA 2K this year because of LeBron. He's on the cover.
It's like now that he's not on your team anymore, you want the...
Yeah, I want to play with the Lakers. Oh, okay. All
right.
And beat the Warriors and then take a picture of it and send it to Joanna and be like, ha ha ha.
This is
take
real.
That.
This is real.
This is what actually happened.
This is what actually happened.
Yeah.
Oh. Cool. I like this. I don't know. Maybe we'll just get a Switch too. We're cool. We're cool, hip, young
people. Are you talking to me?
Lower middle class people.
That sounds like a Switch owner.
Awesome. So that's storm chasing this week. We've chased the storms. Now we're going to go dive into the mystery grab bag and chase a bunch of more stuff.
Yes. You're not going to really be able to tell the difference in formats, maybe, because we have a lot of stuff to talk about. First off, TCAs were last week. The Television Critics Association, you know, a whole bunch of people get in a room, they're television critics, and then the networks prayed out executives and people from
Reed
shows.
Reed Hastings comes out and he's like, I spent $7 bajillion on content for you people.
Exactly. And we got the news from HBO that Game of Thrones will be coming in the first half of next year. So,
which means that it could start as late as June 30th.
Yep. And as early as January 1st, but probably more on Neil's side. But does kind of fit in with, you know, a spring start for Game of Thrones season, which has happened for Game of Thrones seasons. So that's probably what we're looking at, or what I'd guess we're looking at, or what we're going to attempt to plan a whole bunch of podcast content off of, I suppose.
Yeah.
It'll first be half of 2019.
They should do like what Rick and Morty did that one season and drop like the first episode on April Fools and then like not show another episode till like I don't know, November.
That would be messed up. That was a really, that Rick and Morty thing was really great. Game of Thrones doing that would break everybody.
Not me, I don't care.
Yeah, well, I get that. Yeah, Theo, how do you feel about knowing that you now only have like potentially as little as 5 months to catch up on Game of Thrones?
I mean, it means a lot to find something else for the rest of you to watch on Sunday, so I still have an excuse to like fire up the smoker or fire up the grill.
Right.
Because that's what I mainly do while you're watching Game of Thrones these days anyway.
Yeah, it's changed. Theo's now gone to the chef for our Game of Thrones parties, which is fine.
I didn't like last season. I didn't like the season before that very much. It was, you know, just, yeah.
It is good though that we invited you back in our Game of Thrones podcast.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate the work.
but everything that's not based on a book has been trash.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually exactly what I usually say. Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I'm excited. It's going to happen when we think it's going to happen. Hooray.
It's still going to happen 2019.
The question the scheduling question for me is whether or not Con of Thrones will happen before or after. My guess is after. Now my whole Game of Thrones thing just revolves around when can I hang out with my Con of Thrones friends again?
Sure.
So it's like, you know, Con of Thrones, they might get better guests if it's after the last season. Like some of the big actors might show up and maybe that'll make it too big and maybe I won't like it as much anymore. Or maybe it'll make it big and we'll go and we'll still be awesome and more people will understand how awesome Storm of Spoilers is. And you guys are listening.
It'll be like after and we'll be getting like morning breakfast eggs and working on notes and like Maisie Williams will make fun of you for wearing a headband and you'll be like, well, that's it.
Yep. That's actually exactly how that's probably going to go.
To be like, look at that one, has a headband. Because this, like, she called me that one.
This gives me a long time to gain confidence in the headband before like wearing it on stage.
Mm-hmm. That's what it's all building up to. Now that you mention it,
yeah,
you're gonna be out there looking like you're fucking like it's gonna look like a panel on like Three Ninjas 20 years later.
People are going to be like, who invited fat bearded David Foster Wallace to this event?
Did you play Rocky or Tom Tom?
Oh boy.
Ooh, the Three Ninjas amusement park sequel was shot in Denver.
What? There's a Three Ninjas amusement park sequel?
Everything's got a sequel. Yeah, yeah.
Oh man.
Everything has a sequel.
I mean.
You thought there was only one Three Ninjas after the brilliance that was the first Three Ninjas?
I thought it would stand alone till the end of time, but I guess nothing's sacred.
Well, it's also on the very short list of movies that were shot in Denver when I was growing up that I actually like remember.
Nice.
There was like things to do in Denver when you're dead, but it's not like a big thing that people remember. Anyway, not important. You know what is the thing that people are going to remember? The sexy alien symbiote that is Venom. This week, we got our second trailer for Sony's Venom project, starring Tom Hardy doing two Tom Hardy voices, only one of which while his face is obscured. So it's like 1.5 Tom Hardys in this movie. And he is going to be fighting Riz Ahmed, who, it's revealed in this second trailer, will also at some point don the symbiote Rage. Riot. Thank you, notes. Those R words don't look the same when scribbled in horrible handwriting. Riot, the other symbiote. And also has a really interesting tag at the end of the trailer. I don't know if you guys managed to check it out, but he threatens to eat a guy's face and arms and legs, so he will be rolling like a turd in the wind.
Yeah, the turd line.
That was pretty good. It's pretty good. Pretty good joke. I liked it.
I mean, there's Tom Hardy voice stuff anytime Tom Hardy is around. So, of course, his human voice is somehow weirder than his Venom voice.
Yeah, right. Dave, I was going to say that even though his face is only obscured for half of it, like he doesn't really open his mouth when he's talking without the mask on, so it kind of makes up for it.
See, for me, it was almost like a Bobcat Goldthwait sort of thing. Like, and then I found the government was doing bad.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, it all sounded like Adam Sandler, one of his dramatic movies.
Yeah.
She didn't nag, you know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
She was a good wife.
Other than that, I think this looks like the weirdest damn movie we're going to see all year. I mean, I don't know. This, you know what this movie reminds me of? It reminds me of Spawn, like the one with Michael Jai White. Like, who asked for this movie? And like, who cares about Venom by himself? I guess people do.
I mean, I read a lot of the Venom like solo comics,
they're good.
Well, yeah, because especially the concept of Venom being different characters, not always being like the character being the symbiote and like it kind of taking on the personality of whoever he's like bonded with at the time. So like, you know, in the comics, like for a while he's on Flash Thompson, he's Agent Venom, and like he one of the more recent ones, he's on this guy named Lee Price, and he's like this kind of like the opposite of Flash Thompson. Like he's like a decorated military veteran, but he's a total psychopath and like a crime guy, also known as a criminal, I guess.
He's a guy who does crime. That's the same thing.
So I mean, yeah, it's like the idea of a Venom solo movie to me is not inherently stupid. It seems weird that they're trying to do this outside the context of Spider-Man, though, because for me, Venom seems like kind of a pointless character without Spider-Man as kind of a foil to him.
It's hard to establish. So it's like this movie is going to be bad guy against worst guy, right, Dave?
I mean, that's what it looks like. There's some Venom stuff I think that works, but not a lot when he's the anti-hero. I was hoping that this would be more like, I don't know, the old 90s first Venom arc, solo Venom arc, which was sort of like the thing, but in Alaska.
Yeah.
And you just didn't know who the symbiote was on at any given time as it was like slowly picking people off. I was like, I'd watch that movie, but it definitely looks like this movie's doing like a mad scientist sort of twist on it, which feels so much like what Sony thought Spider-Man was about. Like, Spider-Man's gonna fight Oscorp, and Oscorp's mad science. It always feels like that was a weird thing to sort of focus on if you're gonna focus on Spider-Man. Maybe it's gonna work better for Venom, because the symbiote stuff is weird, and it does sort of play like it could be more of an alien invasion movie thing. But I don't think it will. It's a Sony movie. It looks like it's going to be silly. Neil's right. It does kind of look like Spawn. And I was one of the people who wanted a live-action Spawn movie when that was announced. And then I saw the trailer and I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no. We've made a huge mistake.
What did we do? They're actually going to bring the clown into the world like that, but then Violator's going to be all CG? This is horrible.
And then I guess, you know, the thing that looks funny to me still as a digital effect, which I think was a problem, like an inherent problem with Green Lantern, is the whole idea of like the symbiote being able to just like have these like arms that just sort of are a arm ex machina. So like anytime he gets in trouble, like the symbiote just sprouts out of him and fixes whatever situation he's in. Right. Which is fine, I guess. I watched Infinity War again this week, as it's now out on digital, and there's a lot of like of that kind of stuff from Doctor Strange, but that looks cool. This looks a little messy, and I wonder if you think that'll get cleaned up by the time we actually see the movie.
Somebody's got a little symbiote envy, it sounds like.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this is going to be cleaned up by the time we see the movie, because of how much more Venom we saw here than what we saw in the first trailer. I think that's evidence to like, they've now finally got the character model they're willing to show to people. And each time that we see Venom, it's going to be a better and better render of that, is how I would be using my time if I was in charge of these shots. But it's also really forgiving, because in trailers, not only is it quick and can you kind of finish it later, but Venom's just black. So you start with just like a black ink splot doing exactly what you want it to do, hitting all of its marks because it's made out of nonsense goop. And then you spend a lot of time making the goop look good, hopefully. But like right now, I agree with Neil, that like a lot of the contact points where like the back becomes the goop or the arm becomes the bigger thing, it doesn't mesh really well between live action and
I just want to believe that thing is coming out of Tom Hardy.
Right. And Tom Hardy's looking like he's doing acting to make you feel it. So hopefully they could.
He's trying. They
could bring that along. Tom Hardy's doing something.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got a parasite.
I got a parasite. He has lots of turd jokes.
Yeah.
Venom. What are you, Venom? Something I'm going to have to watch.
Why is Venom?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we like it. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, who knows? It could be fun. The worst things have happened. But also, as someone reminded me today on Twitter, Suicide Squad also had a fun trailer. So, you know, never trust what you see on the internet. I also, speaking of trailers, wanted to point out the Maniac trailer, which is the new Netflix series, right? Yeah. It's a series starring Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, reunited after years being apart from Superbad, right? That was the last thing they were in together?
As far as I know.
I think so, yeah. Do you know what it's about?
What, Maniac?
Like, is it the Maniac? Like,
I don't think so.
The movie? Yeah, no, so it's something else.
This is a new thing from Cary Fukunaga, who did True Detective Season 1. That's kind of the last place we saw him. It appears...
And did a lot of the legwork in the adaptation of It.
Yes, he did. So, and Maniac is really, it's based on a Norwegian series. And it revolves around two characters stuck in a mental institution who escape into their own fantasy worlds. This almost, right. It sounds a little Legion-y to me. And, you know, obviously the cast is interesting. Jonah, very, very svelte Jonah Hill and, yeah, man, very Emma Stone. So I think it visually interesting, potentially, because Cary Fukunaga has got a good eye for the flair for the dramatic.
The trailer do anything for you?
Not really. Didn't really tell me anything about the show. I think I could have read a log line for this one and been like, yeah, I'll watch that.
Yeah, I feel similarly. It's the names were there and the trailer doesn't have any dialogue from the series and is compromised of different versions of one shot and some colors and some editing, which is cool, but I don't know if I'm any more psyched than I was just knowing it existed.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like so much of what Netflix has produced so far has largely been pretty decent quality, and this seems interesting enough. So, like, yeah, I'll definitely like check out a couple episodes. Yeah, I like it. You know, I don't know anything about the Norwegian show. The concept sounds interesting enough, so I mean, I'll probably check it out.
Yeah.
Once I'm done with, you know, the next season of Kitchen Nightmares, I'm kind of going through all that right now.
Once I get through Kitchen Nightmares.
Yeah, that'll be
all fun. Right. Neil, I've got some questions for you.
Yes.
About MoviePass.
Oh, I know all about it.
Okay, I don't have MoviePass. Explain to me what MoviePass is just overall before we get to its horrible fate.
Sure. So let me walk you through how you use MoviePass. When you sign up, you get in the mail, you get a credit card. It's a little MasterCard that says MoviePass on it. And it's not like a normal MasterCard. You can't like buy snacks with it or go to the grocery store with it or anything. I've not tried any of those, but I'm told you can't do it. So you have this app and it shows you all the show times. So you can't buy your tickets in advance. You have to actually go to the theater. So you go to the theater. You check in on the app, and once you're within 100 yards of the theater, your credit card turns on, and you can buy your movie ticket. You just buy it full price like a normal person. But you use the special MoviePass credit card. And MoviePass basically pays for your movie, and then you give them $10 a month. It's really sort of a ridiculous thing, if you think about it, because, you know, like if you're doing MoviePass and you go see one movie a month, depending on what time of day you see that movie, it's worth it. And if you see two movies a month, then you can go see, as many movies as you want once a day. And that's kind of how it operated for a while. And then recently, within the last couple of months, MoviePass has started to, it's come out that MoviePass, that whole model, as you would expect, is losing money significantly, basically hand over fist, because they're just buying people movie tickets and only getting $10 back every month. So they started to change some things. They raised it from $10 a month to $15 a month, which is totally cool. Like honestly, if MoviePass worked the way it worked when it first came out, like where you could just see everything, if they didn't change anything about it, I'd probably pay like $50 a month for this, because then I could go see 10 movies and it's like paying half price for all those tickets. But they started changing things. So the first thing they did was they limited how many times you can see any particular movie. You can only see a movie once. So you could not have, you couldn't go see the spectacular Skyscraper multiple times, for instance. Right. And then they introduced a thing where they were going to charge surge pricing, essentially, for screenings that were a lot of people were requesting tickets for. And at first, that didn't seem sound like such a bad thing. But what people realized very quickly was that they weren't charging surge pricing based on demand. They were just charging surge pricing based on what's the most popular movies in general. And so there would be like people who would pay a surge pricing fee of like $5, go to their screening, and there'd be like five people in it, because they're not, it's not based on who requested for that screening. It's like just more people want to see this movie.
Right.
So there was that. And then last week they made another change. So basically this entire time, it's like they started with like the ultimate perfect thing, which was way too good to ever last. But then they've slowly made it worse. So like this past weekend, they blacked out all screenings of Mission Impossible Fallout. So you could not go see the newest, hottest movie with MoviePass. And then they started blacking out like screenings, like where there were people who would check their movie theaters and there were no showtimes for any movies listed. So you just get into this situation where their platform, it looks like it's on the way out. It looks like they're finally buckling under the pressure of how much this was cost. And it really does make me remember the way Netflix was. Like, do you remember Netflix, like way back in the day when they first started streaming, they had streaming plans that were like $6.
Yeah.
Or it was like $5 if you're a student. So, and at that point, Netflix was also just sort of burning money because of all the bandwidth costs. So ultimately what saved Netflix was they had way more subscribers there, and then they negotiated their bandwidth costs down, and they negotiated the price with their subscribers essentially up to a point where they now make pretty good profits and spend on original content, and they actually put more in original content now than they did before. And MoviePass actually tried to do this as well. MoviePass co-distributed the movie Gotti with John Travolta, which was not
really
a hit.
Popular.
Yeah, hugely unpopular movie.
It's just a hit with the critics and the fans.
Huge hit with everybody. So they bought into Gotti. MoviePass, you can also sort of see them working out their business model where it's like certain movies they'll email me about every week. And it's like, I bet that studio paid. Because what we learned with MoviePass is that if you allow people to see unlimited movies in the theater for $10 a month, they're going to use it. So it drove up attendance and ticket sales for certain movies. So it probably helped a bunch of movies. But MoviePass itself is hemorrhaging money. And right. So like the other big issue that they had last weekend was the whole platform went down because it came out that MoviePass couldn't pay for the tickets. So like the credit cards were starting to get declined. So they had to like take it offline. So, great. Well, I don't know. I guess that's the question, that I leave, up to you. Is it a great idea, or was it sort of a fool's errand to think that you could, you know, turn going to the movies into like a subscription service?
I don't understand how you make money on that if you don't control the actual thing. So like this sort of feels like a, I don't know, what, Spotify or a ride share or something, where you're trying to give the consumer a break by creating a new middleman, but all those new middlemen have access to like the songs or the cars or the drivers at least. What did MoviePass And like, how does MoviePass make money even in the perfect world?
Yeah.
If they're buying full price tickets.
I actually think it's two things, or they're essentially like three things they could do. One is raise the price, which I think they've said that they really didn't want to do. And, you know, the other would be, I think they want to bully movie studios into paying them to make their movies available. And I think that there's an interesting proposition there to say, like, okay, if movie studios put money into this to help offset the cost of tickets, are more people going to go see the movie because they can? And I think the third one was for them to sort of get in with the theater chains, which did not work either. Like, AMC has already started their own plan. Alamo Drafthouse is testing their own plan. So I think it's more likely that an AMC would figure out how to do this right. It's more likely that a draft house would figure it out, because the draft house makes a lot of money off of people buying food.
Right.
So they could probably afford to take a hit on ticket sales if it meant selling a whole lot more food. But I don't know if draft house has that problem. Like, we live in Austin and most of those draft house screenings are pretty full. I think it might improve their daytime attendance to like the non.
But even those people have control over the actual movies. They're distributors of films, like,
right.
MoviePass, without having that
MoviePass
edge.
Its position is it had no leverage over the other side. Like, it right. won over customers because, shit, I mean, who doesn't want to pay $10 a month and see 30 movies if you wanted to?
Right.
But they have
no
leverage over the other
side. Huge subscriber base, yeah, that they couldn't motivate into actual business cred.
Right. And
to pull people in.
It's also been this sort of weird thing where I've seen a lot of movie bloggers, people in our space, who have sort of been sort of on the anti-movie pass bandwagon. And I didn't understand that, because I've always found it to be like, honestly, even if I only could see a couple of movies and not the newest releases, I'm still going to use my movie pass once a week. You know, like, this week I'll probably go see Eighth Grade, which is one of their like featured movies. And I'd probably wait until it was on streaming or a Blu-ray showed up at my house to see movies like that. So there is a case to be made for, like, it's great. It helps you, you know, helps you see more movies that you might not have seen in theaters. It helps theaters by getting more people in there. But yeah, from a MoviePass standpoint, I mean, they had to know that they were just lighting money on fire.
Yeah. All right. Well, I definitely see the allure to it. And like, all of my, I haven't used MoviePass statements or whatnot are not humble brags. They're just, I literally had no idea what everybody was talking about. But yeah, it does sound like for a while, it sounds like, you know, like early days of Napster. For a while, you were just like taking this company for all they could have.
Right.
And like, why wouldn't you?
Right. And like I said, it's still worth it. Like, I'm still subscribed, even though I know that I can't, you know, go see like The Meg when it comes out on opening weekend. I'll still use it, but I guess at this point, my only question with it is like, how much longer can this possibly last? Like, there's no, unless they've got a bunch of gold hidden somewhere, this thing's going down quick.
Yep.
So that's that.
Rest in peace, MoviePass.
All right.
All right. Before we go on our second break, or second little mini break, one little other piece of news from this week, Star Wars Episode 9 has begun filming.
Yay.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. They're going to use old footage shot of Carrie Fisher to bring her back to somehow close off Leia's arc. No idea how that's going to work yet. I believe we speculated on this podcast back in Force Awakens days, before we knew it was a shit show to speculate about Force Awakens at all, that maybe she would die just in between movies, but apparently not. So not only will Carrie Fisher be in it, or it has listed part of the cast, but it is confirmed officially that Billy Dee Williams is back as Lando Calrissian. So he hasn't just been skipping out on fan events to be mean. He really is getting in shape to be in a movie as Lando once again. An older version of Childish Gambino.
I guess
can't wait for Lando.
I mean, Lando's exciting. Are they going to come back to the whole robot thing from Solo, where it's like his beloved robot is now the Millennium Falcon? Are they going to come back to that? That's what I want to know.
Like, that would be interesting.
Like, is Rey going to give him, because he's her uncle, is Rey going to give him the Millennium Falcon back and be like, here, you can have your love back?
I'm going to overlook the uncle part, and maybe it would be really interesting to see that part of canon be massaged in, even though the movie started shooting after, you know, the verdict's kind of in on Solo and the verdict was meh. So I would hope so, just because that's part of Lando's character now, and I would like it to be addressed somehow. And why not? Yeah. Now that Han Solo's dead, it's just Chewbacca and Rey around.
You guys both read these Star Wars books and comics. What do we know about Lando? Where's he been?
You mean, so we only know a little bit about post Return of the Jedi Lando. And he's basically, you know, been up to his old tricks of womanizing and running mostly legitimate businesses. But that's all from the Han Solo novel First Shot, which takes place in a couple time periods. And one of them is in the early days of toddler Kylo Ren. And Lando drops by and we get to see him there.
Yeah, I read that one, but I can't really remember anything that happened in it now.
He knew Kylo Ren, or he knew Ben. Maybe how it ties in. So old Uncle Lando's back. Talk some sense to him.
In that sense, that he's like, if Carrie Fisher's gone, Lando might be one of the last, you know, members that still has any sway over young Ben's mind. But and also I forgot to mention Mark Hamill's on the cast list is returning. So Force Ghost Luke for sure.
Well, no,
in case anybody was, you know, worried.
No, those people are trying to reshoot The Last Jedi. They're just going to reshoot it.
Oh yeah,
and Mark Hamill's going to be alive. They're going to get rid of The Last Jedi and redo it. And Mark Hamill's going to be alive, so it's going to be live. You didn't hear about that?
Yeah, no. So that's a great marketing stunt. So you put out a trailer and you're like, December 2019, and you show like two shots from whatever J.J. Abrams is shooting, and then you're like, June 2019, The Last Jedi fan edit. And Disney's like, you know what? Fuck it. We'll go up against Infinity War Part 2 with our own movie. Why not? Luke lives in this one.
The Last Jedi, the Snyder Cut.
Or they could just like combine the two franchises and have like the snap like undo Luke going away.
What?
It's like, and the snap from Thanos fixed Luke. So fixed he's alive Luke. Again. And he's alpha male. He doesn't have any time for bullshit.
That's right. He's just 2 hours of him crushing the First Order.
He doesn't get bossed around by some girl.
Star Wars fandom. I'm so glad we're in the middle of a very long break from you. But Star Wars started filming soon. More Star Wars.
Well, I'm excited.
All right. You should be.
I am.
Onto a topic that everybody wants to hear more guys' opinions about. Gentlemen, did you hear the bullshit that went down with James Gunn and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3?
No, tell me about it. I didn't hear anything about it at all.
good.
I've heard things.
I don't. No idea what you're talking about. What? I assume he's just writing and directing it, just like how he was a few weeks ago, right?
Man,
just
this working is gonna on be the weird
sequel.
Yeah. So they were supposed to start pre-production in the fall, and presumably still will be, because the script is at a workable point. But then a whole bunch of right-wing internet users led by Pizzagate Mike Cernovich decided to dig up some old tweets from James Gunn circa the 2010s, 2012s, basically a pre-Guardians of the Galaxy James Gunn, a more Romeo and Juliet James Gunn, if you're familiar with the James Gunn.
So basically James Gunn.
Basically, James Gunn, making some jokes about kids and pedophiles and whatnot. And to me, the screen caps were very clearly jokes. But apparently, the way the internet works now, there was enough rabble roused in a few days to get Disney's attention, and they removed him as the director of Guardians of the Galaxy 3, sort of sending this into a second uproar of everybody uncovering the, I think, sort of targeted harassment of not only James Gunn, but a whole bunch of Twitter comedians by these this alt-right sect of the internet, who is digging up old tweets and taking them out of context and making accusations that everybody's a whole bunch of Roseannes, just everybody's a horrible racist pedophiles. And interesting to see that they were able to get somebody fired off of a movie, especially James Gunn off of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, as the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise has made almost $2 billion on its own, separated from the MCU. And this would have been the only Marvel characters to have a trilogy done entirely by the same writer-director, sort of providing it as a complete capsule of a whole bunch of characters in an otherwise cinematic universe-focused series of movies. I was certainly looking forward to it. More recently this week, the cast who play the Guardians have all signed a group letter basically saying they support James Gunn and that his apologies before he made Guardians of the Galaxy about those various tweets and after they had been drudged up earlier this month or last month, they stand by him and that he has, you know, become a changed and better person who isn't living life for the shock value anymore. That being said, it doesn't look like Disney's necessarily in a good position to reverse itself. So I think that James Gunn is off Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Is there anything salvageable about this situation, Theo?
I mean, delete your fucking tweets. I don't know. I have really mixed feelings about this because, you know, people on the more liberal side of thing have also used people's tweets to get them fired.
Right.
So it's like, if you're going to get into the whole, like, if you're in that kind of like, let me speak to your manager type attitude with like public figures and like actors and directors and such, then like, it's kind of a slippery slope anyway. Like it's kind of a dangerous path to go down. So, I mean, I think it sucks. You know, I think it could still be a good movie, you know, when it comes out, but it's not going to have that same feel to it. I mean, it's hard to say because, like, I mean, there's so many people got their start doing trauma.
Right.
And trauma movies, like, you know, I happen to enjoy them quite a bit for the most part. And there's definitely a period of my life where I was watching them a lot when I was probably in the same mood as the type of person that might have made the kind of jokes that, kind of edgelord tweets that James Gunn was making.
Yeah, I hope
fortunately that was before
famous.
Twitter. you know, they're gross movies. Like they're made by people who are kind of gross. And it's like when Disney hired him, like they should have been ready for something like this and prepared for it. But like, yeah,
I mean, you
know,
have to assume that they saw Slither. Like,
right.
I also find.
It would be irresponsible of Disney to have not known about those tweets up until this point, which is also sort of like the weird thing is they're like, oh, this is shocking. Goodbye, James Gunn. But it's like, no, come on, guys. You're Disney. Like you have lawyers that do all this shit for you,
yeah.
Presumably.
Well, and I guess my initial reaction was surprising. I was surprised that Disney let him go because you would think that there would be more of an understanding. Like it wasn't a Roseanne situation because Roseanne was, and this is of course the same company that we're talking about. Roseanne, well, actually it is kind of like Roseanne was terrible on Twitter and in life. And then they brought her show back and she continued to be terrible. And then she finally said something that they could excuse as over the line. And I think it put them in a vulnerable spot. Like they had to draw a line. So unfortunately, James Gunn gets caught up in that. My feelings on the whole James Gunn thing is, you know, it's very different it's two very different things to joke about pedophilia and to actually be a pedophile. And I'm worried that there's 30% of our country that can't tell the difference between those two things. It's because there are a bunch of them that kind of supported a literal pedophile who was running for Senate. So, you know, let's not draw a false equivalency here.
It's wholly disingenuous, jokes are jokes too. I mean, like Mike Cernovich does not care about protecting kids. Mike Cernovich regularly posts about how men can avoid getting rape accusations that don't include just not raping.
Right.
Same with the other guy that's big on it, was a Jack Posobiec guy. He's a huge scumbag, but they almost I don't know if virtue signal is the right word, but they use this as oh yeah, look at these pedophiles. This is pedophilia. And then all these QAnon type assholes on the internet jump all over it and yeah, see, this is part of the deep state and their sick values and stuff. And it's really disgusting.
Yeah, it's gross.
It's also really frustrating to see Disney, fire James Gunn for that, but seemingly continue to stand by Johnny Depp, who is a known abuser of women.
Yep.
And unrepentant for it. But I guess that cash cow to them is worth hanging on to, because apparently they just fucking love Captain Jack Sparrow that much.
Yeah, which is interesting.
Second time since I brought up Captain Jack Sparrow. What the fuck is wrong with this?
Which is interesting because I would, I don't have it in front of me, but Guardians of the Galaxy probably did better than the last couple of Pirates movies.
I'm sure. There's no ride for it yet.
Yeah.
No, there is, though. They do have a ride now.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I don't know. But it doesn't have a James Gunn animatronic in it, unlike all the Pirates.
I will say this. This happened from just a pure movie-making standpoint inside of Marvel Studios. This happened with Ant-Man. Edgar Wright was taken off of that project for totally different reasons, obviously. And it turned out it's fine. So I think it'll be a little sad to see a Guardians movie that wasn't made by James Gunn, but it'll still have enough, it'll still be based on his script and it'll still have the same cast, and I'm sure it'll be
charming cast.
Fine. Just charming as hell. Yeah. So, they got to figure out how to make all those characters come back, because I think most of them are dead at the moment. So
yeah, I don't know how they'll figure that out anyway.
So now that's going to happen. I guess it won't be the same, but I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll get around to, getting those characters back somehow. Neil, this next point on our grab bag looks like it's a lengthy one. Do you have something in particular you want to talk about with the Ringer's list of 100 best television episodes yeah, of the century?
I just wanted to go through them one by one. Jesus
Christ. Oh, okay. Yeah,
I wanted to call this out, one, because I've been sort of super in design world, web design world, and this is a super cool project that they did over at the Ringer, and it's a really, really awesome list. It's the 100 best TV episodes of the century. Their top five, let me give you their top five. So number five is Chappelle's Show, the Rick James episode.
I disagree with that one, but
should that be number one?
No, I don't think that's the best Chappelle Show episode.
Oh wow. Number four is the True Detective, Who Goes There, the one with the tracking shot. It's very impressive.
It's good stuff.
Really good one. Number three is The Reigns of Castamere, which they say is the best Game of Thrones episode, which I probably disagree with. Maybe. Yeah, I think I had something else. I'd have to go back and look at my thing. Number two is The Suitcase, which is the episode, it's in Mad Men, Don and Peggy sort of have it out, which is in season four. Great episode. And then number one is Lost, the constant, not Penny's Boat.
Oh, how is Joanna not on this episode?
So I wanted to just get a quick take from you guys. What is missing from their top five, or what do you think they really got right in their top five?
I think they're right about Reigns, because that's going to be the episode that people remember about Game of Thrones. I don't know if it's necessarily the best episode of Game of Thrones, but I think if you allow time to sort of boil it down, unless the finale is something so gigantically huge and culturally shifting that it takes that place, I think Reigns is going to be when people remember this show that did this thing. It's going to be that they pulled Reigns of Castamere off.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair. And Theo, so you said that you don't think this is the best episode of Chappelle's Show. What is the best episode of Chappelle's Show?
I mean, I don't think it's even the best True Hollywood Story. I think the Prince one's funnier.
That's fair. The first one was...
the Wayne Brady episode is the funniest episode of Chappelle's Show.
Really?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. But anyway, the reason why I bring this up in general, everyone should go read it. It's very good. It's a very good list. It's very interesting.
I've also never watched Mad Men.
You never watched Mad Men? Ooh, no. Mad Men's good. You should watch
Kim's
Mad
watched like all of it. I've never really watched it.
You should definitely be the person I know that watches Mad Men post Me Too and gives me that perspective on it, because
Don Draper, total creep.
What's me? What?
Oh God,
I'm not on the internet.
moving on. I know that both of you wanted to talk a little bit more about Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Theo, this was one that you were pushing for. What are your thoughts on this Godzilla movie?
I'm so thoroughly stoked. I think the first two movies in this kind of series, the Monsters, the Legendary Monsters Universe,
the Monsterverse,
the Monsterverse
from Legendary Studios. Like
that first Godzilla, awesome. Kong Skull Island, love it. Just absolutely loved it from front to back. This new one looks awesome. Got a great cast. Godzilla does some sort of fire breathing into the sky, which looks really cool. We see, we see Mothra, we see Ghidorah. There's a lot to be excited about here. I think it's gonna be great.
I'm into
it. And Rodan.
Rodan.
Yeah.
This is the three-headed guy,
right? So, how do you
think
it splits on the good guy bad guy divide?
Is it a 1-on-3 situation?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm kind of thinking that might be what they do. That's kind of the vibe I got. Just from, I mean, granted, it doesn't show much in the trailer. But I kind of get the impression it's going to be like Godzilla defending everybody from the other Titans. But I could be wrong about that. I don't know. Maybe we'll see a turncoat.
I'm interested to see how off the walls, like the Toho series, they're willing to let the American series get. Because the Toho series, if I watched that trailer, I'd be like, all right, Vera Farmiga mom is controlling Ghidorah and tricks Monarch into unleashing it to like stop this like fever, but really it's there to just like cleanse all of humanity. So they have to find Millie Bobby Brown's daughter, who has the power to control Mothra and Godzilla, to get him in the game, because that would be the Japanese version of the plot, is all this psychic controlling between children. And if they're willing to let the American version go there, that might be like fucking crazy.
Yeah, that'd be cool. You obviously know more about the Japanese history of Godzilla than I do.
I kind of want, you know, Mike Dougherty, who's directing this, is the guy who did that Trick or Treat. He did Krampus. Like his stuff's a little weird. He also wrote some X-Men movies.
Well, there's like a whole bunch of flashes of like Rodan over like Washington DC and it's destroyed, and like Godzilla and something that looks like an underground temple area that explodes. So this movie has like a larger scale than, I don't know, it didn't have to have this large of a scale, I guess. I always thought that scale was something that Gareth Edwards brought to the Godzilla movies. I didn't realize that was going to be like what these movies were sort of about, were about like brawls at scale. So now that we're about to get our third entry, I think we could definitely say it's the brawl, giant brawl movie.
Yeah, my real big question is that, so we know that the next one is Godzilla versus Kong, right?
Right.
So how do we get to the point where Godzilla and Kong are on the opposite sides? Because both of them seem pretty friendly with humanity in their movies.
Well, last time a rich gun company CEO decided to knock Kong out and float him down in front of Godzilla on balloons, and they just naturally fought each other.
So they should just steal that plot.
Lots of balloons.
This could also be like a natural rivalry.
Anyway, I share y'all's excitement. And I think, well, you know, and that's what's curious, the good evil breakdown in these is because in the Godzilla movie, in the first Godzilla movie, it was him versus, he showed up because of that other monsters. What were those monsters?
The Mudos,
yeah.
And so we definitely, in this world, like Godzilla, So if Godzilla shows up, he's our dude. Right.
Well, and here's the other question is when it comes to the good evil split, who's evil? Because is evil
what is
humanity?
Evil?
We elected Donald Trump. Mm,
well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Mad. We're a bad bunch of folks, dude.
Why is evil?
It's one of the few franchises where if they were like humans are evil and didn't provide a counterpoint, I'd be like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, yep. Fine. Yeah.
Yep. That sounds like the humans did it.
Solid argument. We're the ones destroying the planet, not Godzilla. Yeah. He's destroying the stuff we put on the planet.
Just skip right to the end of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. We don't care. Humans are bad. We get it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Sweet.
Okay. So this next segment, since we're getting a little long in the tooth here, is a lightning round. So I've come up with a bunch of stuff. And the question is, do we still need these? And need is such an operative term here. Like, does the world need these things? So I'm going to ask you guys simple yes or no, I think. And if we want to make little comments, we can. I'm sure we will. But let's run through this list. So the first one is, really, it's two Joker movies, but the one that now includes Robert De Niro and Marc Maron and Joaquin Phoenix. Do we still, and we're also getting apparently another one with Jared Leto. So do we need two Joker movies, Dave?
No, we just need the Joaquin Phoenix one.
Oh, interesting. Theo?
Yeah, I'm with Dave on this one. I do hope that Marc Maron like gets to do some sort of like stamps.com ad in the Joker movie. That'd be pretty good.
Tell somebody else to lock some gates.
Like, are you trying to go on the post office? That'd be fun.
Yeah, I think I'm a yes. I think I agree with you guys. We don't need any more Jared Leto. But the Joaquin Phoenix is a Joker. Sure, why not?
We don't need any more Jared Leto. And
we just don't need any more Jared Leto.
Yes. The second one we sort of talked about previously. It is, do we need Carrie Fisher via archival footage in episode 9? Theo, what do you think?
I mean, I think there's a way to not do it, but I mean, you know, JJ's a nostalgic guy. I think he's going to handle it with care. I think he'll do a good job with it. So I'm fine with it. I definitely want us to be able to say goodbye to Princess Leia in a movie and not
it's
like just
sad.
And not just like, you know, in real life, the way it's been. I mean,
yep. Dave?
I'm going to say no, or more that I question why they're leading this so long for what obviously, or what to me obviously can't be that much. So like they don't shoot a whole bunch of stuff with an actress that has nothing to do with the plot that the movie's in. So obviously they're gonna have to do some shoehorning in, which to me reads like a great surprise for people when the movie starts screening, not something that you announce with the first day of shooting. So I'm wary as to the spin on this one already, because this is a J.J. Abrams Star Wars, so we're being spun somehow. We just don't know how yet.
Well, I guess that's the question I would ask about in response to that, Dave. Do you think that if they would have kept it kind of in the mystery box, that that might come off as kind of tasteless instead of just addressing it up front? Because I think it's like we're dealing with a real life, very tragic, very sudden death of somebody, and I think that like hiding that might have come off as kind of callous and like as part of like trying to drive up hype for the movie.
Interesting.
Maybe. I think like by fall of next year, I would have been okay with a surprise Carrie Fisher. But again, it also depends on how she's used. If somehow they're able to make like a complete arc and that part of the statement, it was the important part of the statement, then yeah, I'm glad they told me. But it just seems like a weird, if I were doing something as bold as doing that, I would do it and not announce it until I had like a cut of my movie that I knew it was going to work in. Because now it's like they're setting the ground for like getting a movie and being like, oh, this doesn't work, but we told everybody we're doing it. So it just seems weird to me.
Yeah.
But I'm not against it.
Yeah.
It
I guess I assume that he has the footage that he needs. Like he knows he has it.
It seems like a weird time to make an assumption considering only one Star Wars movie has ever gone all the way through production and not had to do significant reshoots.
That's fair. All right, next thing. This week we got our first look at the women of Terminator, the new Terminator movie, the sixth Terminator movie. It includes Linda Hamilton back and looking badass with some shades on. It includes Mackenzie Davis, who you'll recognize from all of our favorite things, and Natalia Reyes, who I believe I've seen somewhere else and can't remember at the moment. It's directed by Tim Miller, produced by James Cameron and David Ellison. Do we need another Terminator movie? Dave, what do you think?
Sure. I mean, if you're gonna bring Linda Hamilton back and do a female fronted Terminator, yeah, I've been in the pocket for Terminator movies with less going for it. So yes, this one's fine. This one's fine with me.
Theo, what do you think? I know you're a huge fan of that last one.
Yeah, fuck yeah. I know. I did like that last one. I thought it was fun. I don't care how stupid it was.
Yeah. So when Matt Smith shows up at the end of this one, you're gonna be like, fuck yes.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. All right, we're all in on the Terminator. I mean, I'll follow Mackenzie Davis anywhere. So a couple of remakes that are out there. Do we need a remake of The Sandlot? Theo, as a resident baseball fan.
No, absolutely not. That movie's perfect.
Dave?
Yeah, no, just make it about Fortnite and call it something else.
Awesome. something near and dear to my heart, because I was a big fan of Gordon Shumway back in the day. An Alf remake. Dave, do we need an Alf remake?
Yeah, because finally somebody needs to be as against cats as I am.
Ooh, nice angle. Theo, your thoughts?
I don't have an angle. I do want to see an Alf remake.
Okay.
I want it to be like an R-rated Alf remake. I want Alf to say like fucking shit and stuff, you know?
Well, maybe they'll do the Roseanne thing and they'll make Alf wear a MAGA hat. It'll be entertaining.
Alf's just like racist.
He hates cats and people of color. Okay, so I'm no on the Alf remake. Apparently, Topher Grace was so shaken by playing David Duke in Black Klansman that he has now done a 2-hour cut of The Hobbit, which didn't he edited something else before.
The prequels.
So
he made episode, I think, 3.5, Revenge of the Editor or something.
Right.
But he did all three prequels down into one movie's length of time.
So we know that Topher Grace can edit, can do a good fan edit, I guess. Are we ready to watch a 2-hour cut of The Hobbit? Theo, this one's really for you because we saw The Hobbit together and we hated it.
No, I don't ever want to see a Tolkien-themed movie again.
Wow.
Because of Peter Jackson and
strong.
What he did. Like, it's like, I don't care. It's like, yeah, if that would have been the first cut, yeah, hell yeah, I'd watch that. But since the other three exist, I mean, they should have never made those even. Like, the original animated Hobbit was awesome. That should have been The Hobbit. That should have been the only Hobbit that ever existed. But fucking Peter Jackson and going, never mind. I'm done.
Dave, your thoughts on Topher Grace's 2-hour cut of The Hobbit?
I might skip it, but only because I found through the wonders of torrents something called the Tolkien edit, which is the parts of The Hobbit that are in the book. It's still like 3 hours long, but it's book accurate Hobbit, and that's a good enough cut for me.
It's very on brand for this show. Next up, there's news out this week that Disney's not looking to make any more National Treasure movies, but they might reboot it for their new streaming service. I guess the question is, would you watch a National Treasure movie that did not star Nicolas Cage, Dave?
Yes, only because there's like that Indiana Jones ripoff, like, idea that like floats right on the edge of my psyche as a child of the 80s and 90s, where it's like, because I didn't have adventure serials of like the 30s and 40s, I only had Indiana Jones and Indiana Jones riffing things. So if we went to like a miniature golf course that had like a crashed biplane on a tropical thing, I'm like, oh, this is the Indiana Jones course. That doesn't need to be. There's a whole group of like stupid faux archaeological historical adventure out there. And National Treasure should mine it.
Theo, I know you're a big Indiana Jones guy. You with Dave on this?
I mean, only if it really digs into the concept of Mason, sort of like reptilian overlords that have been conspiring.
Oh, you wanted to have like a season, like the series long arc.
It's the lizard, National Treasure. The lizard Freemasons.
Yeah, like I don't want it to be like, cause that's the thing is, you know, I don't care about somebody.
Every episode's a Da Vinci Code about another piece of the lizard people puzzle.
Yeah, it's the Da Vinci Code, but about more like realistic stuff like the lizard people and, you know, the Hollow Moon and such.
It's the Da Vinci Code, except about more realistic stuff like the lizard
people. Yeah, you can quote me on that.
That should be the pull quote. Yeah, that's great.
Well, at least we know who we can send to the junket.
Oh, yeah, I had a question.
It came out this week that the remake of Suspiria from Call Me By Your Name, director Luca Guadagnino, is going to be like 3 hours long, which is like an hour longer than the original film, Suspiria. So, question, are you more excited or less excited knowing that Suspiria is going to be 3 hours long? We'll start with Theo.
I'll see it. I mean, Dario Argento is a fucking genius. This is another one that's not really a need to remake it. But I guess if you can't outdo it, you might as well just make it longer, right? But I do like that director. I enjoy calling by your name a lot.
Wait. You just said there should only be one version of The Hobbit and it's animated.
What's your point?
How could these two opinions exist in the same mind?
Dave, I forgot about what I said 2 minutes ago. I don't know what to say.
Dave's over here keeping receipts.
Because the thing is, I uniquely hate the Peter Jackson thing. I don't like anything he does.
Right. But you could could get in with some Luca Guadagnino.
I'm not totally against remakes, Dave.
As long as somebody does something bad to a peach.
I hope that's a theme in his movies.
Yeah, it's just peaches.
But I mean, yeah, I'm for it. I mean, he's a good filmmaker. I'll watch it.
All right. Dave, you in or out on a 3 hour long remake of Suspiria?
Nah.
No.
It should have been shorter. I mean, I'm in, but I'm like, do we need it to be 3 hours long? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, wasn't aren't these other, like, the Witch and Hereditary, they're all under 2, right? I mean, the best intense horror
movies.
Yeah,
the Witch is like, I think it's like 90.
Yeah.
I just can't think about this being anything than, like, an exercise in punishment. You know, like, horror movies that have that pace where you're just like, oh, Jesus. Please stop movie, which, you know, in a good way, because the movie's built you up to that because it's, you know, writing and directing and whatnot. But do I want to do that ever? No.
Yeah.
Those are just experiences that I find myself in.
I feel like the longer you make your horror movie, the more chance you're going to have people being like, I need to get off this ride now.
Yeah, exactly.
Like halfway
like
through.
This is too much. Like, I can't take another hour and a half of this.
I probably won't see it anyway, so I don't have an opinion. Netflix came out this week at the TCAs and said that they would totally make Master of None season 3 if Aziz Ansari wants to do it. Aziz Ansari is someone whose behavior got him caught up in the thrust of the Me Too movement. That's a weird thing.
I don't know if that was the right
how I should describe it.
Crazy.
This is where Joanna would be like, buddy. Would you watch a Master of None season 3 with Aziz Ansari, known not great person, Dave?
Yeah, because if you're going to come back, I think he's going to have to... No, wait. Let me phrase this very specifically so it doesn't come back to bite me in the ass later in time. I am in support of Aziz Ansari as an artist and the history of his comedy art and author comedy, which I guess is still art. I don't know why I separated that out. That if he wanted to do a season of Master of None as a response to what happened to him, I would be very interested to see at least the beginning of that season. I think that would be... He's one of the few people that have been caught up in a Me Too like event that I feel like could come back with content about that and maybe have something to say about it. I don't know why I feel that way about Aziz Ansari specifically, but I think maybe because he was one of the comedians to like not really say anything and just disappear, which was probably the smartest thing to do at that particular period of time from a public relations standpoint. So yeah, I would see it if he wants to. I'm just like Netflix. If he wants to, I'm in.
That's an interesting point. I think that was the position I thought I would take about Louis C.K. is like, ooh, let's let him do one more season of his show to sort of deal with this. But it's different because Louis C.K.'s comedy and show and pretty much everything he did was about how awful he was. So
right. He
already sort of worked through those issues. So maybe that's interesting. I don't know. I think Netflix could probably spend their money on different, better stuff at this point. I mean, let's let those two seasons sort of exist the way they're going to exist. They're both very good. So I don't know. Maybe to let this one go and let Aziz come back some other way if he wants. Thea, what do you got?
I didn't watch seasons one or two, so I don't really care about season three. Never really been a huge Aziz Ansari fan anyway.
Yeah, fair point.
Never. So, like, to me, it's just kind of whatever. Like, his whole incident, like...
Well, I guess the bigger question is, do you think that there's room for comebacks? We're seeing this with Chris Hardwick, where he's now going to be coming back to NBC and AMC, and they're...
Cool. Neil with the big question.
I believe...
Lightning round. Do we still need these? Topic one, men.
I believe in restorative justice.
Okay.
I as a principle, I believe in restorative justice. For me, does that mean somebody getting another TV show? No.
Yeah, like you should definitely get knocked down to like a web series at least.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, it's definitely not my place to decide what should happen to him because I'm a cis hetero white male.
And like Sacha Baron Cohen, you're ashamed of it.
Let me just, by the definitions of like, you know, the society we live in, like I am technically like at the top of like the power structure or whatever. So it's not for me to decide what is or isn't appropriate because I don't believe in that structure. But I do think it's easy to say like, yeah, I don't think like, it's like they're talking about Charlie Rose coming back and having a show where he interviewed other men who have been Me Too.
Oh, yeah, that's
a
terrible
idea. Obviously, this disease thing is probably not on that same level from what we know of the story, but it's like, yeah, I'd be kind of uncomfortable with Aziz coming back and making a show, even if it's like self-deprecating, when he goes back and makes a bunch of fucking money, like being like, oh, this is how I treated these women. Wow, I was a real piece of shit, but I learned. Like,
yeah, I think I agree in the sense that what I'd like to see from guys like Aziz Ansari is not them doing another TV show so much as like getting out in the community and supporting organizations and maybe get into the work of helping victims, you know, put in the time to learn and understand what you're part of and what those problems are and maybe help educate. You know, I don't think making a season three of Master of None is going to help educate young men on how to not be like Aziz Ansari. I think that there are things he can do out there in the world that will be like that. I think I don't think we should just put people back where they were because too much has changed. Right. So I really don't agree with the Chris Hardwick thing. Like I don't agree with them taking him. I mean, I don't know the facts, what truly happened between Chris Hardwick and his ex-girlfriend, but those are pretty strong allegations, and I'm not sure that he should be hosting an AMC show, because, you know, now essentially AMC is saying it was bad enough for us to suspend him and look into this, but we're going to just sort of let it slide anyway. And I don't think, you know, like we talked about the Disney James Gunn thing, I don't think companies can really let it slide anymore. It's not going to go well if you try and gloss over this.
Well, and I don't like the idea of like these giant corporations, like who, you know, have all this power due to the amount of capital they possess, being the ones who dictate who can and can't come back from stuff like that. It's, you know, it's kind of awkward to be like, oh yeah, well, you know, this parent company decided that Chris Hardwick's okay, but decided this guy's not. And it's like, that's really fucked up. Like,
yeah,
just from a point of like what we as a society want from people when it comes to justice and like how, if you can come back, things like that, how it could be done. The idea of the companies deciding that's really gross.
Yeah. Down with capitalism.
You have to tell me about it.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to another dude who I'm sure is totally cool. Simon Pegg. No, not Simon Pegg. We'll get to the person who's I'm talking about here in a second. Simon Pegg was doing interviews this week and said that in like 6 years, we're going to get a Quentin Tarantino Star Trek. Do we still need a Quentin Tarantino Star Trek movie, Theo?
No.
Okay. Dave?
Nope.
All right. Last one. And then we're going to see if my voice makes it through the list of names. This past weekend, Teen Titans Go to the Movies came out, and it was the first DC movie to feature a cameo from Stan Lee, which sounds like sacrilege, but they did use it as a way to joke about the fact that he was out of place, and that is sort of the tone of Teen Titans Go. So, Dave, are you in or out on Stan Lee making cameos in DC movies?
I need a timeout on people making money off of Stan Lee's appearances before I could figure out what the fuck is going on in that poor man's personal life, because I have no idea and I've been following the news very closely. Free Stan Lee by not making money off of him for a little bit. Let him be an old man.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he shouldn't. I guess that's the best way to say it, is he shouldn't need to be acting a lot at this point in his life. Given how many movies he's made and how much money he theoretically would have to be comfortable as a man in his old age. Theo, what do you think?
I don't need more DC movies.
Ooh, hot take.
Oh, hey.
That's a good place to end that segment.
All right. Well, we've come to the end of our grab bag, but the second part of the listing of our fantastic patrons. I'm going to take the first one here. We're starting with the K's, this one, and taking it all the way through the Z's. We got Kate D. We got Kate W. We got Catherine T. We got Katie Z. We got Katie S. We got Kelly G. We got Christine K. We got Quang Yu L. We've got Kurt D. We've got Laura M. We've got Lauren W. We've got Lenya W. We've got Litherion.
Oh man, that sounds like the missing fourth dragon.
Yeah, that's like the coolest one. Litherion. Yeah, that's okay. Good. Litherion. We've got Lily L, Liz M, Liz B, Laurel W, Louise H, Luna D, and Madison R. Neil, I took two chunks. Why don't you take some
totally
two chunks?
Chill. I'm going to start with my guy, Manu. Hey. We'll just get Manu. Everybody knows Manu. Marcus M, Mariana C, Mark T, Matt C, Megan M, Megan M, Melanie S, Melanie U R. I see those two last names. Melissa H, Melissa S, Michael S, another Michael S, a Michael F, a Michael B, a Natalie M P, a Nate.
Ooh. Wait, no, like not a member of Parliament.
Right,
like
not that I know of.
Okay, good.
A Nate, the artist formerly known as Nate, a Nathan B, a Nathan C, and a nerd.
Nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. We got Oliver's possessive, apostrophe S, G, Patricia D, Philip D, Rachel A, Randy B, Randy W, Rebels Podcast, that's just one thing, Rick R, Robert D R, Rose S.
Then we got Ruby D, who I believe made us cookies at Con of Thrones.
Fantastic.
Pretty sure. Russell G, Ryan M, Ryan A, and a Ryan S. Lots of Ryans. We got some Sams. We got a Sam C. We got a Sam A, who is also a wonderful moderator of our Slack. She's kind of cool. We got a Samba M. We got a Sarah C. And we got a Sarah E. And I saved a Sarah for you, Dave.
Yes, Sarah C. Right before Sean, just Sean, and Sean C. Then there's, So Sam?
Sure.
Oh. Yeah, Charlene L, Stacy W, Stacy T, Stephanie D, Stephanie H, and Stephanie W.
Wait, no, that's Steven.
Steven W. Stephanie, someone named Stephanie W just got a free shout out. I'm not okay with that.
So we have another Steven B. We got Summer M. Everybody knows Summer. We got Sverir S. I think that's how you say it. I'm so sorry. We got Tanya A.S., we got Tom W., we got Tommy F., we got Saquon G., that's right, I got it. We got Vanessa M., we got Vanessa C., and we got Victoria S.
And finally, we have Wade M., Warpstone, just Warpstone, Whimsy Riot, Will W., what up, Will, Yves F., Zach E., and Zachary S., who... gets the distinction of being alphabetically last. Guys, thank you so much for subscribing to, I believe, the Maester level or above.
This is a small council.
The small council, the most elite of the elite.
Yes, this is the, you get the shout outs, you get the movie club, you get
me,
Theo.
Get Theo.
You actually will just send things. You Theo if you're on the small council. He has 180 people to visit this year.
Yep.
It's totally cool. You guys didn't know that.
Don't worry, they gave me all of your addresses.
So thank you so much for subscribing, and get in if you want your name read in August. Get in soon. We're going to be splitting them up over multiple episodes. So you need to go to patreon.com/normalspoilers and subscribe now to make sure you get in the next round. Because who knows? Maybe it's going to be alphabetical. Maybe we do all the T names 1 week. We're gonna have some fun with it. Speaking of 1 week in the future, Neil, what are we up to next week on Storm of Spoilers?
Well, Dave, in order to go forward, we must first reach into the past. We are bringing back King Cast by popular demand. A lot of people loved when we did the Stephen King episode before. A lot of people wanted us to delve deeper into Stephen King. And with the release of Castle Rock, I think by the time we record next week, it'll be what, 2-3 episodes out, Castle Rock?
Oh, by the time we record next week, there'll be 5 episodes of Castle
that's
Rock.
That's 5 out. Episodes I need to watch. So Castle Rock is your only homework for next week. And we're not promising that we're going to necessarily talk about a bunch of other Stephen King things, but obviously we'll have a more general King discussion and then a very stormy segment about Castle Rock.
Yeah, I think if you were to go, you know, into some other King books, the ones to be revisiting would be the ones that take place in Castle Rock. So I know, like, Cujo takes place there. Salem's Lot takes place there. Those would be good ones, I think, to go off of. Those are the ones that are also, I think, Easter egged in the credits for the most part. But we'll discuss all of that with more authority next week. Until then, Theo, thank you so much for joining us for the Maester's Grab Bag.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
And I'm glad that we got, you know, some full-ranging opinions from Godzilla things you're looking forward to your full-throated non-support of the white cis male-built capitalist system. I feel like that's the whole Theo spectrum.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't get into metal or well, we got a little bit into baseball.
Yeah, we didn't talk. I almost brought up a metal album I've been really into on my pop culture stuff. Nice. But
we'll save it for the next time.
That's something you can catch on my Twitter account.
What?
Hey. Yeah, speaking of, Theo, where can people find more of you online?
You can find me on Twitter at One More Rick. I'll also be guesting this weekend on the Southpaws podcast, which is a leftist sports podcast. We'll be talking about some of the tweet issues that have come out of baseball players lately, as well as some of the domestic abuse issues we've been seeing in baseball as well. So if you want to catch that, it's a great podcast. Highly recommend those guys.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
No, it's terrible. It's fun to be on the podcast.
Sounds like
it's terrible stuff.
Good old left wing self-flagellating, but hopefully, you know, in the solutions based way, I'm into it.
Hell yeah.
Neil, where can people find more of your work online?
Get me over at thefilmschoolrejects.com. You can follow me on Twitter at rejects, where I'm doing more and more late night. Neil's a little inebriated and he's going to watch a movie and tweet about it. Which people seem to find entertaining. So I'm going to keep doing it, I guess. And don't forget, obviously, follow the show at Storm of Spoilers. Don't forget to email us if you have questions, comments, things you'd like to tell, Joanna and Dave and I. StormofSpoilers@gmail.com is our email address.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. I have my latest work pinned to the top of that profile page. You can also, as I've said multiple times, find us at patreon.com/stormofspoilers and subscribe for extra content. But until, you know, next week when we go to a very, very spooky town in Maine, I have to ask you, dear listeners, please do not fall down.
Kill you all! Drive you crazy. I'll kill you all! You ever had my worst dream come true on everything ever.